Okay, we're gonna now move to paper number 12. Denise's paper, and this one deserves some additional introduction. This submission came to us from ESMA and was part of their concerns about the operation of IFRS 5 in what I would call unanticipated transactions. By unanticipated, I mean not anticipated by the standard setter when they wrote IFRS 5. Because it's written very much in the context of a sale for cash. Even though it talks about some other things, an awful lot of it is conditioned on hanging a sign on the outside of this building that says for sale. And it starts to raise some perplexing problems when the sale is either an IPO, distribution of owners, loss of control in some circumstances. So they've been trying to explore some of those sorts of things, and this submission, in my mind, was sort of the first step in that process. On Friday, Michael and I participated in a conference call with an yet-to-be-unnamed European company that was very surprised by the similarity between the wording of this submission and the wording of their annual report. So was I when I read their annual report in advance of that meeting. Their concern was that based solely on the submission itself, the committee might not have adequate information. And they wanted permission to submit some material for our next meeting. I agreed to that, but I told them it would be worthwhile for the committee to have some discussions based on what you have in front of you, but that we will not take a vote. We will not attempt to reach a conclusion. So our discussion would be designed to help them in framing the paper that they plan to submit for us, to us, excuse me, for discussion at our next meeting. Do I hear any objections to that approach? Okay, Denise, please.
Thank you. The Interpretations Committee will receive this request to clarify the application of the guidance in IFRS 5 regarding the classification of a non-current asset or disposal group as held for sale in the case of a disposal plan that is intended to be achieved by means of an initial public offering, but where the prospectus has not been approved by the securities regulator. And then another question about a change in a disposal plan from a plan that previously qualified as held for sale into a plan to spin off the disposal group and distribute the dividend in kind to its shareholders. And this submission is reproduced in Appendix C to this paper. We sent out an outreach request, but the deadline to receive comments only closed yesterday. So this agenda paper does not have a summary of these comments. I've got some comments if anyone wants to hear about the 7 cost standard setters that replied to our outreach request. So basically, regarding the first issue, the first question, we agree with supporters of view one on the basis of our assessment of the criteria described in paragraph 8 of IFRS 5 against the facts and circumstances described. We think that the sale by means of an IPO where the prospectus has not been approved cannot be considered highly probable. We also do not think that the disposal group would qualify as held for sale. We think that the requirements in IFRS 5 are clear and no further guidance is needed in the case of the analysis of this fact pattern. And regarding the second question, well, we observe that in accordance with paragraph 26 of IFRS 5, an asset or disposal group continues to be classified as held for sale as long as the criteria in paragraph 7 to 9 of IFRS 5 are still met. Consequently, we didn't support any of the views that were provided by the submitter. We think that the conclusion as to whether the disposal group continues to be held for sale is dependent on the continuous assessment of these criteria. So our recommendation was the Interpretations Committee should not take either of these issues and analyze onto its agenda. So we issued, for this purpose, to a tentative agenda decisions that I understand they are not submitted, they will not be approved.
No,
at the
we
moment.
Will not be reaching an agenda yes. decision today. I think that's only fair in the circumstance.
Yeah, so that's it.
Comments? Bert?
Well, the first question, I disagree with the staff proposal. I think it's not necessary to issue a prospectus because the prospectus, to me, is the last step in a number of steps that you undertake to have an IPO. You have a legal entity that you have to set up, you have to talk with investment banks and so forth, so you have a very large number of steps to take. And then you have the prospectus in the drawer, and this is the very last legal formal step before you actually issue the shares. But I think within the confines of IRS 5, paragraph 8, you reach the criteria much earlier than when you actually issue the prospectus, especially if this is obviously a European case. In other jurisdictions, it might be quite different. So if you say it's you meet the legal requirement of issuing a prospectus before you can reach the IFRS 5 stage, I think it's too late in the process. I think you have undertaken a lot of steps much earlier. And even Wayne said it is a particular case, but I think it's very common around the world that people try to do IPOs and carve-outs. And I don't think that everyone waits till they issue a prospectus before they actually account for it under IFRS 5. So I think it's more a form over substance argument to say you have to wait for the prospectus. I think you have to use your judgment and you have to consider all the facts and circumstances in a particular case.
Bert, I wonder if I can test that a little bit. I certainly understand that view. The problem is that I think it's paragraph 6, uses the language must be available for immediate sale. And how can something be available for immediate sale when the sales document does not exist?
Yeah.
That's the one that I'm having trouble getting over.
It doesn't say under this one method. It doesn't say only under an IPO.
Yeah.
I mean, all you have to do to adjust it is say that you plan to sell it, but not necessarily through an IPO. And you can meet the criteria.
Well, it has to be available for immediate sale.
Yeah. But it says subject only to terms that are usual and customary.
So that's what
you're getting the visa. Getting the visa from the securities regulator are usual and customary terms in order to get through an IPO. So I completely support Ben's point that much is done before you have the regulatory's approval for an IPO in Europe, and so that you can pass the criteria for that the disposal group is available for immediate sale. You just need to get the visa, but you can be prepared in advance. You know what are the requirements. So if you do things properly, you get the visa.
That's what I meant. You have it in the drawer. You know,
yeah,
you just
so
put it out
and
file.
It's not difficult to get a visa. So for me, it's part of the usual and customary terms to get through an IPO. So if you're okay to accept the market price for what you're going to dispose, if you have done your marketing by going through the institutional investors and so on, who would be the ones placing the offer and so on, I think you can demonstrate that you meet the high probability requirements.
There's an example. There's an example in the standard, I forget which one, that talks about a property that's subject to planning approval. And it specifically says that until you get planning approval, you do not meet the criteria. How is this different from planning approval?
Well,
That's, as I say, I'm not trying to argue one view or another. I'm just trying to test, because I remember when we did this standard, and one of the motivations was to make it pretty hard to call something discontinued operation. But let me go on with around the table. Guido?
Well, I looked at the assessment of the start with about 30 of the paper and realized that especially two of the requirements, the start things that they are not met here. And one is what Dan just mentioned is that an active program to locate a buyer and complete the plan must have been initiated. And I think we need to apply this in the circumstances of an IPO. This is not a normal trade sale, it's an IPO. And as I understood the fact pattern, the company has publicly announced that they are going to make an IPO. I mean, how would you contact buyers in an IPO? Would you write a letter to all possible institutional and non-institutional buyers? No. So in an IPO, they have publicized that they are going to do an IPO, and my understanding is they also contacted institutional buyers. So what else would you do in an IPO to test the market and to see whether you could have an IPO? So I think under the circumstances of an IPO, I think, yes, they have done what they need to do in order to contact buyers and make them aware that they are going to make an IPO. The other problem was, and with the, by the way, with the paragraph 7 immediate sale, I agree with the others. I mean, that's also what the fact pattern says. They made an assessment whether it's highly probable that they will get the approval. For me, that's the same thing as getting the approval of the board. I think that's one of the other examples in the standard. If you need the approval of the board, you don't have to have the approval. It has to be high probable to get the approval. And the other issue that was an obstacle, at least to the staff, seems to be that testing actively marketed at a price that is reasonable in relation to its current fair value. And I think the staff says, well, the price has not been publicly announced yet because you haven't issued the prospect. I don't think that this is a necessary requirement. The standard doesn't say you need to publicly to publicize the price. You wouldn't do that if you would sell something in a normal trade sale either. You would not publish, I am going to sell this piece of land for 2 million euros. You're not going to do that. You will getting in contact with probably buyers and then telling, okay, this is what I want to have, or would you like to pay me? So you would not publish a price. So I think it's not a requirement. And again, my understanding of the fact pattern is that the company looked at the market, talked to external advisors, looked also at third-party analysts' comments on the estimated market value of an offering price. So from my point of view, looking at the fact pattern, also this requirement has been met. So I'm, you know, looking at this IPO fact pattern, I think that the requirements of IFRS 5 have been met already. So I'm a little bit struggling with that. I understand that the second question we address later on, otherwise I could also comment on that, but just to give you, as long as the mic is open, I can understand that you could get to the solution reading strictly paragraph 26 of IFRS 5, which only talks about if the criteria for something as held for sale are no longer met. Unfortunately, when the held for distribution part was introduced in IFRS 5, this paragraph was not amended. So if you read it word by word, you could say, well, it's no longer held for sale under the circumstances, but it switches to held for distribution, and that's why you need to apply 26. I can understand that somebody comes to the conclusion. I could all, but I still can understand the staff's argument saying, well, it's still not there for continuing use, so you don't have to get out of IFRS 5 and the next second go back into that. But I think that if everybody agrees that that makes sense, which I think it makes sense, then needs to be an amendment of the standard to make sure that if you're changing from held for sale to held for distribution, you don't have to go out of IFRS 5 and then get into IFRS 5 again.
Andrew?
On the first point, I guess my problem is along similar lines, because the way the gender decision is worded, noted that the approval of the prospectus by the securities regulator is a condition. And that comes across as almost a rule, and the very existence of the prospectus process means you can't meet health for sale. And I don't see it like that, and I don't think we've seen it like that in the past. It's all part of the highly probable assessment. It's facts and circumstances, and I don't see the difference between that and shareholder approval, which the paragraph 8 specifically talks about. So I think it's all facts and circumstances in a highly probable assessment, and it's not just the very existence of the prospectus doesn't kill it.
John?
I personally don't think that this is a question that we should be answering because it's basically fact-driven. The question is really whether in certain situations, conditions are met or not. It's not whether prospective should be obtained. I think there's a difference between the two. First of all, prospectus, it varies from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. And it's not the prospectus per se, because to my knowledge, in most jurisdictions, it's an administrative matter. So you can just get the prospectus when you want to get it. It's the restriction that underlines the prospectus that may create an impairment or a lack of compliance with the rules that are meant to be. But this is a question of condition. In the fact pattern that we have, I don't know. I'd be inclined to think that the condition that the asset must be actively marketed for sale are not met, but I don't know that, and it's not automatic. I believe that in many situations there is approach to potential buyer, and there is also underwriters' involvement. They test their market. Mm-hmm. It's not an automatic conclusion that these conditions are met. So, for all of that, I think that this is not a question for us. The other thing, I think it's here because it was classified as asset held for sale, and then it was withdrawn. Okay, because market conditions declined. That has nothing to do with the prospectus. Maybe extend the length of time, but I have nothing to do. If I have no prospectus requirement, I meet all the conditions, and market declines, I will withdraw because I don't want to sell, I don't want to sell at a very low price, and so I will postpone or I will withdraw from. So, for all of this, we should refrain from addressing this question.
Anna?
I actually agree with John in terms of the facts and circumstances, whether or not we should deal with it. But I disagree with view one that the staff has taken, but I also agree that it is all on the basis of facts and circumstances. And in fact, I think that what is in the paper is not specifically reflective of perhaps what is in the submission, because the submission actually says that the company believed the approval of the prospectus was highly probable. To me, we shouldn't be, which is to John's point, second-guessing the fact that they have determined that getting that prospectus approved is highly probable. And on the basis that they have, to me, it fits all of those, it fits all of those highly probable things, then it can be shown as available for sale. So the mere fact that there is a condition that you have to have a prospectus is irrelevant if it is highly probable that you can get it. And I think that it is effectively as available for market for immediate sale as it can be. And the fact that they've gone to the institutions to determine the prices, that effectively they are getting a price. So I certainly am very comfortable that it does meet the criteria in IFRS 5, and I actually look at it differently from your, and I can't actually find that example, but I'm sure it's there somewhere, it's just me not being able to find it now, of your getting property permission or whatever it is, on the basis that if you didn't, if you weren't sure that you would get it, I mean, how tough a thing is it to get it? So if it was highly probable that you would get that, I'm probably going to shoot myself in the foot now, I would say that it was, I could put it as available to say. So I strongly disagree with where staff have got to on this one. And in terms of the second point, I actually agree with whoever it was, Andrew or Peter, I think, who talked about it, and it's that paragraph 20. Effectively, I think when the amendment was made to IFRS 5, I think that it probably wasn't done as well as it could have been done, in that it didn't link to that paragraph on available for sale. So I actually think that I think it's hard, but actually if you read the standard literally, I don't think I would reach the answer that Denise has reached in relation to that, but I think that we should be making an amendment to IFRS 5 to make it clear, because the answer that she's reached is an obvious, sensible answer, but I'm not sure we actually get that from reading the standard at the moment.
Laurence, and then Scott, and then Charlotte.
Yeah, on question one, I'm in agreement with all the comments that have been expressed so far. That is, I do not get hung up on obtaining approval by the securities regulator on the prospectus as a condition to have the same highly probable. I would look at the other facts and circumstances to really make the decision. So I disagree with the staff proposal. With respect to question two, I was in agreement with the staff proposal to say, okay, you can have this idea to sell through an IPO, now you change, or you're going to decide to dispose of it through a distribution, why not? So for me, it's disposal, as long as it is disposed in the next 12 months, that's fine.
Scott?
This issue brings back nightmares for me. There are lots of places in US GAAP where whether something is probable or not changes the account. In US GAAP, the word probable is used in the same way highly probable is used in IFRS. So think 75 or 80% likelihood or something like that. For reasons that are unclear to me and make me cringe every time it comes up, accountants applying US GAAP have concluded that IPOs and changes in control and business combinations are not probable until they happen. So that is null set. If you're going to dispose by IPO, it is not probable until the IPO has happened, because there are too many uncertainties surrounding an IPO. That is applied in terms of accruing compensation costs that are contingent upon the IPO. It is applied in terms of classification of stock options, if they're going to be cash settled in the change of control, but equity settled otherwise. They're left as equity until the change of control actually happens. Even though the guidance says if it's probable they'll be settled by cash, you would switch it to a liability. So for reasons that I don't like, we in the US have decided that IPOs are not probable until they happen. That makes no sense to me. Clearly, an IPO can be probable before it happens. And I don't believe that whether the prospectus has been filed or not is determinative of whether you've hit the probable threshold. I note that Appendix B to IFRS 5 talks about times when you can have an extension beyond a year. Mm-hmm. And I believe one of those is you need regulatory approval. Well, if it can be probable before you have regulatory approval, why can it not be probable before the prospectus is approved? That doesn't seem to track to me. I think I think conceptually it's not right to say it's not probable until you have a prospectus. Unfortunately, that doesn't provide a lot of help to people dealing with the question, because we're basically saying facts and circumstances, and the fact that you don't have your prospectus in, that is certainly one of the things that you would take into account. But it isn't determinative. So I agree with everybody else. I don't think that ought to be determinative, but I have this very nagging feeling that practice under IFRS and US GAAP has gone in very different directions here on a standard that on the face of it is close to converge. And I wonder if there might not be some possibility for both boards to jump in here and try to get to a reasonable place that would be applied across the board.
Charlotte, and then I'm going to weigh in.
I think I'm pretty agree with most people here that I would think that prospectus isn't determinative. I think in situations it could be determinative if it was such a big hurdle to get through that it did make you question your probability. But in a lot of cases, it's almost just a lot of stamping issue, and it's an admin process rather than a substantive hurdle. And I would disagree on a couple of the points on the criteria that because you haven't issued a prospectus doesn't mean you haven't contacted potential buyers. You will have spoken to, investment bankers, they would have reached out to institutional buyers, to other prospective buyers, to see if people are out there willing to buy. There's very few times people issue a prospectus and it's the first time, you know, they're questioning the market for it. You know, that bit's pretty determined before, which is why banks will tell people, you know, not to do it and get the feedback there. And also, I think there's a mixture. I suppose one question I would have is whether issuing a prospectus means you're more or less likely to withdraw from a market if there's a sudden decline in market value. But I still think you're able to withdraw anyway, so the prospectus doesn't tie you in for definite in any more way.
Okay.
Can I say something?
Yeah, but Denise, and then I'm going to say something.
Well, okay, I hear all your views.
She's never coming back.
No, she's fighting me to fight that right now.
I understand that from a practical perspective, as Charlotte mentioned, possibly that's just the stamp of everything. However, the reading of paragraph 8 in IFRS 5 tells me that you need to have an active program to locate a buyer, and to me, without the prospectus being approved, you were doing all this behind the scenes. To me, from my reading of this paragraph. And also, I didn't read that the company was actively marketing for sale at a price that it was reasonable to its current fair value, because it didn't have the final approved document. Well, my analysis is there in below paragraph 30, and that's, I think it's a matter of judgment, definitely.
I think there's an inherent, before Philippe comes in, I think there's an inherent tension here. And despite the fact that I'm hearing overwhelmingly the focus of where the focus of the committee is going, I would like to continue this on and get the follow-up submission. The reason for that is there's some very, in my mind, and I think in Denise's, although I didn't see her paper before she submitted it, there's some very explicit language about actively marketed. And you can't actively market without a marketing document. It's against the law in most jurisdictions. So whether or not the issuance of that is a formality or not suggests to me that there's an inherent tension in the standard between the focus on does it have to be, this is more pejorative than I mean it to be, just highly probable? Or does it have to be just highly probable and subject to some very specific criteria? Now, when Michael and I discussed this meeting with the ESMA enforcers group, my recollection is there was a significant difference of opinion among the members of that group over whether or not you could market, you could meet some of that very specific language, and they did not, Laurence, consider normal trade terms to be getting, including regulatory review, at least the ones who spoke up on it. Others were obviously in the other camp of it being probable rather than otherwise. As I said at the beginning, I think we need to identify and help practice with this tension in the standard. We also need, I didn't know that because you asked practice, Scott, but we need to reach out to Sue Cosper at the FASB and follow up with them on this one as well. So, subject to your agreement, I think we should carry this over, see what more information we get. We may at the end of that conversation say the focus ought to be on probable. I think that would help practice, especially the dinosaurs like me who tend to read the words differently. Philippe and then Andrew.
My experience, long years of approving prospectuses and being involved, that in an IPO, most of the paper will be taken on by institutional investors, not the public at large. And all the book building with institutional investors is done before you've got the official approval of the prospectus. So the active marketing for the major part of the take on this IPO will be done at the time you get the regulatory approval. And then you can only start marketing to the public at large with a prospectus on radio, on communication, on press, on media. But all the major part is already done. So, actively marketed. Well, if you rely only on the public appearance, on the face of it, appearance of marketing, which is having advertising in the media, in the newspapers, yes, you don't have active marketing. But the reality of the active marketing, it is done. It's a done deal at the time you launch an IPO.
And if that's the decision we reach, fine. I think it would help practice and tell them. Andrew?
Well, I just want to clarify that the purpose of getting more input and discussing it again is to try and deal with general issues in the standard, not to deal with a specific fact.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The only reason I think we have this one is because it's symptomatic and it was the easy one to find when somebody was writing up the submission. Scott, and then let's wrap it up.
I was just going to try to prompt Don to tell us a little bit more about the issue, if you were part of the discussion that caused it to be submitted.
No, I wasn't part of the discussion, so I'm sorry, I haven't got
no problem.
Shelley?
I'll own up to being part of the discussion.
I got somebody to own
up. Perhaps it's the U.S. Gap legacy that started this. I would just concur with the company that called the ISB staff to let them know that the paper's very simplistic. There are a lot more factors going into it. Primarily the market, capital markets, and whether at the time they decided that it was a desktop. The market was good, and did it get worse? Was the market, were they just anticipating that the market would improve? So there were a lot of factors. It was not simply a bright line, this prospectus approved or not. So I think you're going to see some of that in the submission.
Really trying to stop this, Bert. Go ahead.
I'm trying to stop this for the next meeting, actually, because if we listening to that and to what you said, I understand that we get the facts and circumstances in this particular case that has been submitted, which is obviously an individual company. However, around the table we have a consensus that generally, if the facts and circumstances are within a certain range, we might issue an agenda decision saying, use your judgment within the facts and circumstances, and that's it. We don't need to see a particular paper of this company because we know that they might or might not be in this call, which is not our call. That's the call of their regulator. Our call is, do we have to need it? Have to have a prospectus, and I think we have reached consensus that we don't.
We did struggle with exactly what Wayne pointed out. Is it just highly probable? I mean, are we just looking at a probability assessment, or are we looking at highly probable with some very specific words that the ISB wrote down?
And I think I'm not going to hold out against the will of the committee. if the will of the committee is to wrap this up today, okay. My concern is that when we met with the people who enforce these standards, there was a significant level of disagreement. About 50-50, I think, between the folks who focused it on one, on one set of words, and those who focused more on the probability threshold.
We did some significant outreach when we were dealing with the issue to 5 or 6 other regulators, and there was worse.
And so I would agree if all, and the purpose of this conversation was to help inform the people who are drafting this paper to submit to us. If all we learned was more facts and circumstances about this particular transaction, it's not our business to question individual judgments. If we learn more about how people are thinking about one of our standards and can better inform people, then it would be worthwhile. Okay, shall we proceed on that basis then? Okay, I don't see any objections. Thank you.
Does that link to the second question?
Do we want to move to the second question, or shall we just wait to see the whole package later? Wait to see the whole package later. Okay. Michael and I are kibitzing here about the running order. I think we are agreed that the best approach would be to bring April's paper number 11 on protective rights and to roll over the issues on share-based compensation to tomorrow. I would also propose looking at the other things that are up tomorrow that we bring the share-based stuff first. And if that means one of the other topics has to roll off to next meeting. Okay.
Right. Okay, thank you.
Paper number 11.
Do we have time for a brief break, possibly?
I feel so proud of myself. That's why I managed to make the message.
I would have to make
it. Yeah, exactly.
Are you still working on the second one?
But I'm hoping that we'll go to the editorial board as an effects analysis.
I'm not hoping.
We're committed to that going to the editorial board. I stand corrected.
Correct, yes.
I know read the best
story.
But I love the pressure, like, generally. Like, wow, that's amazing.
Just to be clear, the issue you're dealing with is
All you know is that they concluded at the end of the day that generally something happened.
But a press release that says generally is generally not very good. Because usually they're overly enthusiastic, right?
We say, okay, just make sure that they
can. You're still getting rid of it, so it's fine. I guess you joined the committee when you were first.
No, I'm very good.
That sounds much better.
What we did as well, but
in the middle That was
at that point.
Didn't mean to put you on the spot. I was just trying to get some more reason to address it.
Yes. Last slide.